stranger? I didn't see you standing there. Welcome to Columboys, a podcast all about the cattle rustling, old-timey, gunslinging adventures of Columbo. Folks around these parts call me Tumbleweed Cooper, and this here's my mule, Magnolia. Say howdy to the folks, Magnolia.
I am not a mule.
This week we're taking a look at the first episode of the second season of Columbo, Etude in Black. This episode stars actor-director John Cassavetes as a conductor who murders a musician that he's having an affair with.
What the fuck just happened?
What?
Mac?
Huh?
What did...
I don't know what you're talking about. Playing the part of his wife is Blythe Danner from the Meet the Parents films, as well as, many others. Blythe Danner was 6 months pregnant with Gwyneth Paltrow when this episode was filmed, making this her first uncredited role as womb occupant. In the director's chair this episode is Nick Colasanto, who people our age, you and me, Ben, remember as Coach from Cheers. That's right. This episode was directed by Coach.
Hey, good for you, Coach.
It's pretty cool. This episode also marks the introduction of Columbo's dog, Dog. Dog survives into the ABC years, making him yet another in the long list of signature affectations of the beloved television detective. There's even a statue of Columbo and Dog in Budapest, Hungary.
Huh.
Dog and the many dogs that played him have passed, but they left behind a legacy of good floppy fuzz boys.
Who's a good boy?
He's a good boy. He's a very good boy.
He's a very good, uncredited boy.
So a little behind the scenes talk. When we were talking about this episode, you're like, oh, this is still early. They're not getting into the nonsense like his dog.
Like right. I knew there was a dog coming
actually.
Because of actually that same statue. Because I've seen that in an episode of Travel Man. Show if you haven't seen it. Anyway, I thought for sure, surely the second season is too early for a dog affectation to be introduced.
Yeah,
but
I mean, the dog stuff's pretty light. Like, really, it's just sort of a reason for him to be at this vet. Like,
right.
it could be anything.
Well, it was just, it seems like it was just a bit written in to have him be at the doctor's office, but surprise, it's a twist. It's not really about,
yeah.
Right. And then there's a dog involved. But anyway, hey, Mac.
Hello.
Welcome to season two.
Welcome to season two. That's right.
I'm very excited about this season.
It's so far so good. This is a very good episode.
I'm sure there's a pitfall waiting for me, but man, I loved this episode.
This is a barn burner right from the top.
Yeah.
You have John Cassavetes, who is an actor and director of sort of more avant-garde films in the 1970s. And you've got Blythe Danner's great. We've got Myrna Loy, who people maybe remember from the Thin Man series.
Right.
Sort of a star of the golden age of the silver screen. And then you've got just a bunch of people in bit parts that are fun.
You already mention the who was it from Punky Brewster?
Oh yes, what is the guy's name?
I can't remember. That's the only
the
part
IMDb.
Of it that struck.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, he's the dad on Punky Brewster, and he was also the commandant in the Police Academy films.
Yes. That's the other place I recognize him from.
Yep.
Yes,
and that guy was George. George Gaines.
George Gaines.
Yeah. Punky.
Yeah.
Oh, Punky. You didn't know that I had a George Gaines waiting to go, did you?
I did not.
Well, now you do.
And now everyone knows.
So, and they can't unknow it. It's an unfortunate thing that now we all have to deal with as a nation.
Yeah, so.
So, the basic rundown. Pretty simple plot, actually.
Yeah,
not a lot of twists and turns in this one.
No, it's kind of straightforward, and that's okay. The basic is pretty basic as far as that structure.
The murder plot.
Yeah, murder-wise. It's a guy who is the conductor of a symphony.
Right.
Who is married to the daughter of someone on the board of the symphony, but
yes.
Who clearly has a lot of authority on that board.
I think the owner. I think that she is the chairman of the board, but also owns
an
symphony.
Owner.
Yeah.
And so he has this very swank life, and he has an affair with a piano player
right.
who gives him an ultimatum of leave your wife and marry me
or
else.
I'll make it messy in public.
So he kills her.
Yes.
So pretty straightforward on that front.
And he types up a fake
suicide note.
Does it ahead of time.
On some very lacy stationery.
Personalized
head.
Stationery. Yep. Does it ahead of time. I'm not entirely sure why he did that. I mean, it seems like he had plenty of time to type that out.
It does.
It's like
seem
three
like...
sentences. It's not like it was.
Yeah.
But whatever. And
there's a lot of creepy neck touching.
He knocks her out and then turns the gas on.
Right. And blows out all the pilot lights.
In her on her gas range.
Right.
And then she suffocates.
Right. And so does her cockatoo, which is
yes.
a shame.
I mean, as far as people being murdered, this is, I mean, aside from the blow on the head, this is pretty merciful.
Yeah. Like, it's surprisingly humane.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing for me to say about murder. But
it probably hurt being knocked out, but like honestly, as far like she didn't get shot, she didn't get stabbed, like
right.
she didn't get strangled, which is what I thought was I did think that's what happened
for a moment.
Right.
You know,
because
but it's just
that's
that,
been
like,
a very common thing.
Yeah.
And you've got a guy with gloves on, he comes up behind her. But no, he hits
right.
her with covers an ashtray in like a cloth. So that it won't like shatter or leave a mark on the ashtray,
and then
he
just
smashes
her
with it,
right.
and then he moves her by the.
But when I first saw him, you know, tying that up, I thought for sure, oh, he's going in for
the
choke, the
neck, yeah.
and I just, you know, I mean, we've had a couple that have been kind of violent.
I mean, obviously, he's still a murderer.
No,
but,
he's a horrible monster.
Yes, it's bad. I do not want to in any way condone this person who is terrible in every
once again
way.
We do not condone murders.
Once again, the Columboys is anti-murder.
We are anti-murder.
We are anti-murder. Murderers do not listen to this podcast.
Yes, you are not allowed.
I'm going to be sad when I see the stats later and it's all dropped off
because everybody who listened
was
murderers. That's a bummer, man.
Yeah.
But
oh,
yes.
Well.
So
look, hey, look, I'm willing to take the hit.
Yeah.
You know, if that's
too,
what
man.
It's got to be, if we lose our audience because they're all fucking murderers, that's fine with me.
Yeah. If you're a murderer, we don't want to. Yeah, we don't want anything to do with you.
Yeah, I would say that this. So that I mean that's it. The complications are that he was wearing a carnation because he was dressed in his tuxedo for the thing. And
well,
he,
I mean, yeah, he was in tails.
He was in
white
tails,
tie,
and
which
he
is pretty
came
standard.
Over to the murder in his finery for some reason.
Well, so hold on. Let me see if I can do this quick. But
okay.
Basically, he. He sets up by telling the security guard and everybody at the Hollywood Bowl, because they're having the opening night of the symphony
not
season.
To disturb him.
Yeah. No calls, no guests, nothing. I
right.
don't want to be disturbed ahead of the performance.
Oh, also,
then he gets dressed.
We should mention mm-hmm. that he has put his car in a garage where he knows that it will be locked away.
Right, and secure.
And he has opened the window in that garage. I guess it is a little more complicated, but it's really
yeah,
not.
Well, some of the details are complicated about how he tries to
but
forge an alibi.
But it's a pretty simple story, and also the thing that gets him is, honestly, like, it's given away. Like, you kind of know what it is from the beginning.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the carnation.
It's the carnation.
And let me say, I am so excited. That was the big thing.
Yeah,
because like when I saw it, it's the kind of detail that I love, and I really love that was the thing. Because initially, like,
I mean,
the bird kind of they give you a read like, oh, maybe
they really
the bird.
Telegraph it though on this one. That's
oh,
that's
yeah.
my main complaint. That's what would be my main complaint. Is
no,
that
I think that's valid.
They focus on it too much to the point where there is a shot which is insane and very hard to describe. Audio, but it is
right. Okay.
It is okay. So he arrives at the place. I know. We'll get back to
this. Remember, like, Death Lends a Hand.
Yes.
So
it's
like
that, but way worse. So
yeah,
he arrives on set. He arrives at the murder.
He arrives at.
Why
her
did
apartment.
I lose the ability to speak? What's happening?
It's her apartment.
He arrives at the apartment where the murder has taken place after the police are already on the scene.
Right. After the symphony.
After the symphony. He arrives and he's looking around to see if he fucked up somehow.
Right.
And he notices the carnation on the ground.
Oh,
and
it's so good.
It's,
I love
and
it so much.
They superimpose the carnation over his sunglasses and then it.
But it's like a snap zoom almost.
Would be weird enough, but then they zoom in, so it looks like he had like the carnations were his pupils, and then his pupils get like huge, like going like,
yeah,
wonderful.
It's almost, it is almost like the like cartoon, like Tex Avery level.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird. There's a lot of weird choices in this. Coach makes some interesting directorial choices, I would say. That's probably there's a couple of like snap zooms and like really like focus in on.
Yeah, but that's the thing is even with those, overall it's pretty solid.
No,
I think that's
so.
A mix of directing, knowing enough to not, you know, kind of throw weird shit at the actors, but I think, and it's also a pretty good script
for it. It's mostly a sort of this one's mostly a character piece, not so much a mystery, because like, I mean, none of them are mysteries, but this one you kind of know what it's going to be the entire time.
Yeah,
like, it's just waiting for Columbo to figure out about the
And I think that's why your complaint about it being a little heavy-handed with the telegraphing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm with you on that one. Like, it's a little much. I'm excited that it was the Carnation, but at the same time, like, they really hammered it early on, and then they kind of just let it stay out of the way until they brought it up again. And by the time they bring it up, you know, after Columbo's on the case,
right? I think
it's just a dead ringer. Like, you know,
I think that if they had set up the Carnation early, like that he was wearing it, and then later you saw him without it, but they didn't have that snap zoom where it's in the thing, and then later when you see him take his jacket off and then pick it up,
mm-hmm.
if they didn't have all the like the snap zoom and stuff,
yeah,
I think it'd be much more like, well, did he just drop it then, or is it like is this kind of thing, and that would bring you into the mystery a little bit. But I think the fact that they're so like, there's so much production around it, really hammers home that it's the important detail.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I do think that the majority of this episode is really about how big an asshole John Cassavetes is as Alex Benedict.
Yeah.
And how much of just a smarmy, smug prick he is.
Yeah, we first meet him. He's practicing at the Hollywood Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a concert, and the concert is sort of the main, it's, I guess, a series of concerts
I mean, it's a season. So this is the opener to the entire season. So it's an important show.
Filmed actually on location at the Hollywood Bowl.
Right. And broadcast on public television.
Right.
Or broadcast, at least. I think it's then rebroadcast.
Right. Exactly. This one, I think the vet, because Columbo listens to both of them. For some reason, the vet has a TV blaring this in the examination room.
Yeah,
which is a weird thing.
That doesn't seem like...
No.
Well, I mean, I guess if it's always the symphony, maybe it's soothing for the animals.
Maybe. But it just seems a little weird to just have a TV in the room while you're doing your work.
I agree.
When you're a vet.
Right.
Like, it's one thing if you're, you know, a guy, you know, lifting packages or, like, doing manual labor, but like just having a TV on while you're a vet, like it seems like you should be
paying
attention.
Brain immediately goes to maybe I should have the symphony on while I express these anal glands.
You don't have to bring anal glands into our podcast.
I mean, there was a dog
now
on the table.
Now they're in the world. Now I know, but it just, anal glands, it's not where I want to be.
Sorry. I mean, let's be fair, I don't think anybody enjoys that process.
No maybe the dogs, it's hard to tell.
Let's never speak of this again.
I agree.
Okay, moving on.
So we meet this guy. He's an asshole to everyone at the production. He comes in and like tells everyone to move the cameras around.
Yeah, he's like, oh no, this is the exact same shot you did last time. I want something different, blah, blah, blah. And he's basically telling, you know, the director and the cameraman and everybody how to do their jobs.
Yeah.
So, like, very early on, it's established that he thinks he is smarter than everyone else.
We meet him with his mechanic, who doesn't like him either, and his mechanic, and he, like, brings the thing into the mechanics to stash it, essentially, he tells him that, you know, there's something wrong with it, and the guy seems very frustrated. This is obviously not the first time
that he has brought it in to be complaining about some little thing that is not worth the guy's time.
Right. And there isn't even anything wrong with it.
I mean, in reality, but
I'm guessing this isn't the first time.
Oh, but also, did you notice that he had to make some, like, oh, the woodwinds are wrong and this is that, like, about his engine.
He was very...
Get it?
Yeah,
I conduct.
Yeah, he sucks.
Yeah, he's awful. Also, he doesn't play piano. Sorry, the very first
there's
time
a lot
that
of very him. Bad fake piano playing in this movie. In fact, the only person who actually plays the piano
is Columbo.
Is Columbo, who plays chopsticks. Yes, during he plays chopsticks in the Hollywood Bowl.
I mean, hey,
on stage. I mean, he's done more than I ever wouldn't want to do that. Yeah. Exactly.
I love that. I love that he is the only person actually playing a piano.
He might be the only person playing an instrument in this, like in this movie, that where the sound of the person playing is actually the sound that is broadcast. But
yeah,
because I'm pretty sure in that scene that the sound of the piano is him playing.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah,
the rest of it probably not. Like, not even the jazz club.
No, definitely not the jazz. Definitely, at least not the trumpet in the jazz club.
No, certainly not.
I would say some of the poorest fake playing that I've ever seen. There's that when we meet our ingenue piano player, she is Jennifer Wells. She's gently caressing the keys.
Well, she is tapping the keys,
yes,
but she is not pressing down on
the
keys.
No, none of
the
keys actually are depressed. Mm-hmm. There's a scene earlier where John Cassavetes is playing the piano very roughly, and you can tell that it's such a terrible prop piano that every single key he presses sticks.
Yep.
Like every single one.
Yep.
And
none of them
just
come
when
back.
He gets up from the piano, there's still a key that's like jammed all the way down.
It's awful.
A very bad piano.
Yeah. I felt so bad for that piano when I saw that keyboard after he got up.
I mean, that piano's already dead. I think the piano's been dead for years.
But the other one, I guess they just didn't figure out how to mute keys so that she could play and not have
they were just like, just pretend it doesn't matter. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah, nobody's gonna notice.
Exactly. I mean,
just us assholes.
You have to, I mean, you do have to remember, like people obviously took pride in their work in the 1970s, but everything was going to be basically like shown once or twice. You know, things weren't rerun in the way that they are now, or weren't available to rewatch as readily as they were.
And I think that as time has gone on, we have developed an obsession with that attention to detail.
Yeah.
Even more so kind of in a post high def world of television.
Sure.
It's very easy for
on the TVs of the day, who knows what that looked like? We're watching it on Blu-ray, like a print of the original.
Yeah, we're basically watching a film print on on a television that is ostensibly like four or five times the size of what.
Yes, and four or five times the resolution as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it looked okay.
Yeah.
I would say that this episode, is visually competent.
Yeah,
the weird, you know, snap zooms aside, the sunglasses aside.
I wouldn't say this is not an episode where I go, wow, the cinematography, or that was the coolest shot I've ever seen. But that's also fine to me because everything just kind of gets out of the way of me going, wow, Alex Benedict is a total prick.
Yes.
And he thinks he's got Columbo on the ropes, and Columbo is just fucking knocking him out left and right. And it's like,
there's no romance in the way that there typically is between the villain and Columbo.
No.
He does not like Columbo.
No,
it's very clear he doesn't like
Columbo. It's like almost immediately. Like, he shows up at the crime scene, and that is the only time that he is not just outright like, I fucking hate you, dude.
This might be the least justifiable showing up at a crime scene we've seen so far.
Oh, absolutely.
Because there's absolutely no reason for this guy to be there.
No.
Like, he should not be there. He should be with his wife.
Yeah.
After the concert, he should have gone home.
Yeah.
And this is what gets him on Columbo's radar in the first place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is, if he hadn't been there, he wouldn't have picked up the carnation, and then Columbo would have been on him immediately. Like,
right.
I mean, he was.
There's no win for him, but there's no win either way.
I mean,
because
he's a murderer, so fuck
you're
him.
You're a murderer.
But at the same time, like, you shouldn't be there. Like, there's no reason for you to. It's one of those things where they say, like, you know that old saying that the guilty party always returns to the scene of the crime?
Right.
This is like, it's like, you shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
It's a secret affair.
Yeah.
And there's no reasonable reason that a conductor of an orchestra would show up to the home of a piano player in the orchestra if they didn't have a pre-existing relationship.
Right. There's just, it doesn't make any sense. No. Other than, well, I'm just going to go check on my handiwork. It is really, it is a colossally stupid blunder. And I mean, you're right in that, like, he dropped the carnation and didn't notice it before. And either way, he would kind of be screwed. But in this way, I mean, as far as the character goes, it really leans into his arrogance.
Yeah.
And his sense of, like, I'm the smartest guy in the room. I've got this down. And,
yes. I think he probably thinks that his suicide cover is so good that it's unassailable, when really it's actually not very good at all.
No.
I mean, it's a pretty flimsy thing. He knocked her out with an ashtray and then turned the gas on. Like, it's not like he, you know, it's not like some grand scheme. It's just like bonk and then like turn on the gas. It's
and then really on top of that, the suicide notes typed.
It's a terrible suicide
note. And he typed it ahead of time.
Yep.
And so that gave Columbo the opportunity to be like, well, look, it's lined
misaligned.
Up. It's not aligned. So when I hit the S, see how it types over? Like,
yeah,
all of those things where he tries to just hand wave them away. And there's Mac, there's so much laughing.
Yeah.
There's so much inappropriate laughing by this dude when Columbo is talking to him about murder, about somebody who is dead.
Yeah, he spends a lot of time going like, oh, Columbo, if I was going to kill her, why would I do that?
Yeah, dude, oh, Columbo, like, why would you? I don't like, no, I get that you can't be like, what? She was like, I understand maybe you can't fake all that stuff, but at the same time, it's like, why is that?
Why are
what
you laughing
choose to
right
do?
Now? Please stop laughing.
Yeah. Like, a woman is dead
and
you
killed
her. And you are laughing in front of
a
detective.
I'm laughing, so it's weird.
Yeah.
This all
got real weird.
He's bad at it.
He's very bad.
And the thing that catches him is set up in the murder scene very visibly.
Right.
Which is, so this one is not a mystery.
No.
Even in the Columbo sense of the word, this is just a bide time and watch these kind of great actors come up against each other. I think Myrna Loy does a great job. There's like a really great scene where she's the, where they're having a boardroom meeting and then she's talking to this trumpet player who is also having an affair with the, well, not an affair because they were both single, but who is also seeing the piano player. And he's like, well, I have this past. I smoke a little reefer every now and grass.
A little grass.
He likes to smoke grass, you know, and he was, and
it's like the same way that you drink your gin.
Yeah. During Prohibition. Drink your gin during Prohibition, which is actually very funny because Myrna Loy, the Thin Man series are basically about a couple of drunks who just drink all the time. So that's kind of a fun.
There you go.
That's maybe a
nice
little
nod.
That's maybe a little nod.
It's probably a nod.
But so this is very early on the 420 blaze it, you know, legalize it.
Right. We're cutting edge.
Hashtag legalize it.
Oh, I get what you did there.
Do you? Do I get what I did there? What did I do there?
You know what? Let's not.
No, honestly, not I have it. No idea. Please tell me, what did I do there?
Hashtag.
Oh, I didn't do that there.
Yeah.
Well, that was apparently done there without my knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, I don't approve of that kind of humor.
Yeah. Well, it's too late. You did it. You're gonna have to edit it out.
God damn it.
Now that we said
we have to edit it out, I have to leave it in.
Yeah, I know.
God damn it.
It's a catch 22. Can I stop though and talk about when he shows up to do the murders?
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of really creepy, uncomfortable neck touching.
Yeah, it's a lot of head grabbing in general.
Yeah, it's like instead of like the face off thing where they like run their hand over somebody's face. Yeah, the face waterfall. Yes. It's just like he goes in for the kiss and then he reaches in and like grabs her neck like he's choking her.
Right, and then comes around and kisses her.
Yeah,
it's
and like
very uncomfortable.
And she kind of does it to him too.
There's
but
a part,
it's still just super creepy.
There's a part where he goes in to kiss. Is it her or is it Blythe Danner? I can't remember which one. But he
describe
goes in,
it.
He
I'll
goes
see.
In to kiss one of his two loves, and he grabs the top of her head and the bottom of her jaw, and then kisses her as though he's taking a bite out of a Big Mac, like just like You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
It's such a weird kiss. I don't remember exactly who it was. I think it may have been the mistress, but
I think it's the mistress, and I think it is. I think it's like the
right before he kills her. But it's such a weird, like, and that's 100% a John Cassavetes thing.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's a thing that John Cassavetes does. That's his move.
But yeah, he just went in like, I'm gonna draw your soul.
It's
out.
Like, yeah, it's like if you wanted to like open someone up so you could like pull like Dementor their soul out of their mouth. Like yeah. that's
how
the
you would do it.
Grip that you would use.
I mean, that's how I would do it. I'm not a murderer, but that's.
You can't be a murderer, because then I have to kick you off the podcast, Ben.
I know, man.
Please don't be a murderer.
Mac, I'm not a murderer.
Okay, that's what a murderer would say, Ben.
Mac.
Ben, now I'm worried you're a murderer.
I'm not a murderer.
Oh.
Listen, if I were a murderer, Columbo would show up.
Columbo's dead.
See?
I guess that logic checks out.
Yeah, let's not examine that too closely.
Do you want to talk about the clothing? Because I feel like we've gone so long without talking about the clothing.
I mean, I do. Well, I mean,
there's a lot of hot looks in this one.
There's a lot of wild stuff because, like, the first outfit that that we see Cassavetes in is like a striped blazer that looks almost like it's seersucker. It's not.
Yeah.
But it's kind of close to that. And then he's wearing a brown turtleneck.
Well, this is about midway
pants.
Through, but yes.
Yeah. No. The very first time we see him.
Oh, does he come back?
Is when
he's wearing it later.
Putting the suicide note and the gloves to murder with in his briefcase and stuff.
It's the same outfit he's wearing when Columbo comes to the house for the first time.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like he's wearing that same outfit again later, and then he so he's got a lot of really natty suits, and like,
yes.
And it's in that very kind of like early 70s sort of like very wide,
yep.
broad lapels and the very big ties that are like paisley or other loud prints,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of browns and earth tones. But
this episode was 1972,
September
of 1972.
Yeah.
So yeah,
so he's got a lot of that kind of, you know, like stylish sort of the era going
yeah.
on. His tailcoat though, his white tie outfit is impeccable.
It's really good.
Like,
I mean, that look has
on the nose.
That look has stayed consistent. Like that
well,
really
course.
Has not changed.
Well, I just appreciated that, like, the details were correct, and that
yeah.
like it's the, you know, kind of like the Marcella front, which is that textured kind of thing, and then the bow tie is the same way.
Yeah.
You know, and like
his
and
bow tie was
display.
Under his collar for several scenes, and it really bothered me. But
yeah,
I,
no, that's not how it's supposed to be. But also, it's one of those things where I let it slide because of all the running around he did in the text,
yes,
which is another
true.
Weird thing.
He
that,
does, yeah. So when he's
I know that's part of his alibi establishment, but
right.
like he puts on like a trench coat over it, and then he runs out.
I mean, I put on the tux. I know it takes a little while to do. Like
yeah.
I put, especially one that's this sort of involved with the French cuffs and all of that.
Well, I mean, so
but I would think that he has done this many times.
Yes.
He would be fairly adept at it. Like, seems like it would be so much easier to
do
like,
that afterwards.
Well, first of all, take off the jacket.
Yeah.
That jacket, like, you don't like that jacket with the tails when you're doing
yeah.
murdering and like crawling through,
right.
You know. He's at one point has to crawl through the garage's bathroom window in the dirtiest bathroom
right.
in the world.
I'm sure that's not on his tux, right? I mean
yeah.
that's why he wears
I mean
coat.
There's like he's like in a garage, he's like leaning on a thing in the garage, like there definitely would be a giant grease stain all over his like wonderful tan
right.
You know, overcoat.
But counterpoint.
Yes.
The Jennifer Wells
uh-huh.
would probably have noticed if he weren't in his tailcoat for
oh.
the opening night when he shows up to be like, oh, I love you, let's talk, and then smack.
But the fact that he shows up there so close to the showtime should be a warning for
it
her.
It should
anyway.
Be, but clearly she's...
I mean, the fact is she should be there. Why? I don't know. I'm not sure
right.
how far from the performance is it that she's not... Because she is performing.
Well, that's the big
because
question.
Early
is,
on
like,
the,
how early in the day is he...
It's a very good question because she's in the performance.
Listen, this murder doesn't add up.
No. Well, yes. The performance takes place at night. We know that because when they're filming, it's darkness behind him and you can see the lights of the stage lights.
Right.
Filmed inside the Hollywood Bowl, in the real Hollywood Bowl, so it would have had to have actually been night. So let's
right.
assume that this takes place in the, you know, the autumn. Let's be generous and say it's autumn. Still, that's like midday.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a, like a 4 hours between the time he murders her and the time she'd be there. Like, I would think if you've got a performance like that, I mean, you and I both know people who do performances. You want to be there way ahead of time.
Yeah.
And she's like not, she's not dressed. She's not getting prepared. She's just sitting at the piano, like playing the piano.
I mean, the timing of like him coming back and then.
And then immediately going back out on stage.
Hey, I can't reach her. She's not come in or anything like that.
She should be on the way. If he has to get back so quickly that he needs a car to do so, she should already be at the place.
Maybe she's just habitually late.
Maybe she wasn't going to go this week and he knew that because it was part of the ultimatum. But it isn't clear. Like, she should be on the way.
No, I mean, at this point, we're just nitpicking, but that's fine. I mean, that's what we do.
I mean, what is this whole fucking podcast?
That's fair. So
we could just literally say the plot, but I mean,
that's true. No, that would be an incredible podcast. Yes. I just, we're, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not the ones for that.
No.
Anyway. So there's a bunch of stuff that Cassavetti wears that is kind of incredible. I just want to touch on a couple of things.
Sure.
Columbo comes to his house and he's wearing that same jacket over a brown polka dot shirt that he has, well, correctly, I guess, unbuttoned to 1972.
Yep.
Because it is unbuttoned almost to the buttoning point of his jacket, which is too much, guys. It's too much. Don't do this.
You can see a lot of chest hair in this.
Yeah,
in
and this it's not outfit. Like, oh, that's a good chest of hair.
No,
like,
it's wispy.
Yeah, it's...
As a person with wispy chest hair, this is bad.
Yeah,
this is a bad decision.
Yeah, it doesn't look as good as he thought it did.
Just because a look is current doesn't mean that look is for
right
you.
For you.
Yes, exactly.
Pretty much. So that's one of those things where I went, but then I noticed his boots because he's got these amazing like side zip leather boots that have a Cuban heel on them, which is, you know, like a inch or so heel.
Mm-hmm.
And those are very good boots.
Yeah.
I would wear the hell out of those boots. I'm really into those.
He's a well-dressed guy in general. I mean, the 70s notwithstanding, he's generally pretty well-dressed.
Yeah. So there's some really good... There's some really hot stuff in this on that front. There's
Blythe Danner wears some pretty great outfits as well.
Well, there's that, right. She has that weird, so when Cassavetti comes back from the murder and from visiting the site of the murder.
Yes.
She's taken sleeping pills and is like passed out on the couch.
Yeah.
But she's wearing this like lacy robe that then has like
ribbon. Yeah.
Like ribbon tape threaded through it.
Yep.
It's a weird, weird number. And then like there's a child who is the next door neighbor who is important for a misdirect in it.
Yeah.
And that child not only dunks on Columbo over his dog's name.
But she's also wearing a weird house,
quilted like house on the prairie sort of nightgown where it's like I don't know where it buttons or zips up or anything. I didn't get that detail. It just like was like a green and some other colors and was very noticeably quilted.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk for a moment at least about the very weird sexual politics of this episode.
Oh no, I was definitely getting to that because
there?
Right when Columbo is looking at information about
he's arrived at the crime scene.
He is complaining about, first of all, he's complaining to I guess another detective who has the biggest tie I have ever seen.
It's a big tie
and the biggest lapels, like bigger than the comical Anchorman level lapels.
Yeah, it's like a parody of the 70s,
but
it's real
70s style. But he's complaining to this guy about how the officers who arrived first wrote down a description of her, and he
it's the description of her given to him by like the station. So all the information that the station had on her, like essentially like this is she's dead, she's female, she's a piano player,
and he is complaining. He's like, look at the, you know, she has bedroom eyes, and
he keeps saying bedroom eyes over and over again.
Gross.
He's very
knock it off.
It's very weird. Basically, the reason he suspects murder is because he's like, why would a woman this beautiful murder like kill herself?
Right, which is
weird.
It's like, hey man, you don't know people's internal lives.
Yeah, I mean he is correct. But also, it is a weird line of thing. There's also this little girl who you know, next door, who there's like this, he has some weird interactions.
He comes to talk to her basically
at a at a dance class.
Did you know, like, was anybody there the day of, that kind of thing? And she says, are you interested in me for, like, basically?
Well, he says, well, you're actually a smart little, or like, you're a bright young girl. And she says, oh, what interested me in you? My brains or my body? And it's like,
no,
you're like 10.
Yeah.
Please don't.
This is not okay. Good. None of this is
happy with what's happening right now.
Yeah. I hate all of this. And it's, And there's the level of that kind of.
Yeah.
Shitty
that
behavior.
The gross
from...
the 1970s.
Yeah,
the
gross
1970s stuff that is very real.
It's really that part was super gross.
Yes.
But the thing,
mercifully short, those parts.
Most of them. And I mean, Cassavetti has some moments like that where he's like real gross to his wife.
Yeah.
And I really like
Tanner
it,
gets
but...
it gets it real bad in this episode, I would say.
It's I hate that part of it. But I really love seeing Columbo just slam on him over and over again, because every time he thinks he's coming ahead, like, Cassavetti just eats it hard, because Columbo is just like,
it's a real Lucy Van Pelt Charlie Brown football situation. Like, he is always
but the difference
is going to, like,
the difference is we are rooting for Lucy in this scenario.
That's true.
And normally we're like, Lucy, you are an asshole.
Oh, is that what we're thinking?
I mean, that's generally how I think.
Okay, well,
I mean, listen,
that's an alternate take on it. It's interesting.
Charlie Brown is also an idiot.
Charlie Brown's a fuck. Look,
but
we don't want to get into Peanuts talk.
Yeah, let's
we
not
don't
step on Peanuts Gallery.
Infringe on the Peanuts Gallery, our sister podcast.
Let
at
me
Waffle
just say,
Media. Please like and enjoy Peanuts Gallery.
Share and enjoy.
Hosted by Molly and Josh.
That's right. No, it's very, but
it's a great it's a great show, but it is not our show.
But I really love. There's this moment where, Cassavetti is talking to Columbo, because Columbo is saying, I'm pretty sure this was a murder, not a, like, what if, he's doing that kind of slow lead, and Cassavetti is like, well, I know a lot of artists, and, when they're up, they're really up, and when they're down, they're really down, and he kind of, does this whole thing to be like, well, you don't know artists, man, but artists, like, kill themselves all the time, which is a real shitty thing to say, but my favorite is Columbo's response, which is basically to go,
like, he doesn't really put up with it in this one.
No, he does not take bullshit from this guy, but it is so great. Like, there are moments where Columbo, like, takes him by the elbow momentarily, when he's looking at his car, and, like, Cassavetti, like, you see the disgust on his face, and he brushes up, like, he thinks he is so above all of this. And it is
he gets brought down by
it is
it's just a simple carnation. He was wearing it on the day. He was wearing it in news.
I'm just
going to
hammer this over and over again. I love seeing Columbo dunk on this guy, and
it's definitely worth watching. I would say this episode.
I think the
even though the mystery is not particularly mysterious.
No.
The performances are good enough. This is another one where the performances really carry it.
This is like the thing you were telling me before, where we're really seeing it in this episode, where it is kind of Columbo and the murderer kind of going toe to toe.
Yeah.
And it's not like, oh, I'm artfully dodging.
Yes.
It is just them going at each
other. It's just a conversation.
Yeah. And it's so satisfying, because every time that Cassavetti is like, ha 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 ha, and laughing while he's talking about this person he murdered.
Yeah.
Columbo is just slapping him down. And their first real interaction that is not at the scene of the crime, when Columbo goes to his house, that is the immediate moment where Columbo pisses off the murderer.
Oh, yeah.
Normally it takes a little while for him to get under his skin, but it's right away. And it's the really, I love this. And I think this is a great thing to kind of stop talking about this on.
Sure.
But where Columbo just asks him, like, I'm sorry, this is a personal question, but what are you paying taxes on this house? And then he asks, like, how much money do you have in the furniture? And, he, in this complimentary way, and then he twists it and goes, how much money do you make?
Yeah.
So, like, he's already gotten the information of, your shit is so expensive.
Yep.
And then at that point, he stammers and is like, what? I don't want to talk about that.
He says that they paid $750,000 for the house,
which is insane.
In today's money, that is equivalent to essentially $4.5 million for the house.
It's a nice house.
It's a very nice house.
And then I don't remember how much he has in the furniture, but it's like,
it's like another, like, it's another couple million. It's about $1 million, like, total for the whole thing, including the people who work there.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, that's quite a bit of money. We're looking at around $6 million in today's money. And Columbo just says, like, well, how do you afford all that on a conductor's salary?
Yep.
Because, I mean, he is a conductor, and we see him at one point scoring a Hitler documentary. It's very weird to just see Hitler.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I feel like we have to at least let everybody know that is part of the...
There is a point where you're just watching it, and then all of a sudden, Hitler.
Yeah.
Like, just no warning, like, and here's Hitler.
Yeah, and it's not like a guy playing, like, it's a film...
full-on archive footage of Adolf Hitler at a rally.
Yeah, because it threw us for a loop.
Yes, it's very weird. Yeah,
because it's like, but why did you choose that footage for a documentary?
I think they just were. Is it going to be a documentary about, you know, Hitler or the Third Reich or something?
No, I mean,
like
I get that, but my
point is weird for the show.
There are plenty of things you probably could have used.
I guess so, but
anyway,
yeah, it is. It's a weird moment.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. All in all, I'd say absolutely this is one to watch.
Yeah.
Don't skip this one. This is a real good one.
No, you'll want to listen. You'll want to watch this just to see Cassavetti just eat it.
I think it's worth watching it just for the carnation zoom sunglasses thing alone. I think
it's pretty good.
Just that moment. We should get that moment up on YouTube.
I would love
for
a
people
gif of that.
To enjoy. It's pretty wonderful. Yes, if you make a gif of that and send it to me, I will love you forever. It's amazing.
It is pretty sweet. But yeah, it's a very good one. I really enjoyed it. I do also want to comment that at the end, when they do kind of the big reveal with, like, I'm going to roll the film of you conducting, you don't have the carnation. Here's this film that we were taking at the scene of the crime.
No, it's the reporters who were
Oh, the
reporting.
Reporters. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. It is the reporters and that footage. And here's you with the carnation coming out.
Right.
But, like, the creepy intensity after he... basically is called out on the carpet by
where
his
he
wife.
he tells Blythe, like, I still love you,
and like,
always you, and
but like leans in and whispers
happens.
It to you, and for a moment I thought he said I'm gonna kill you.
It did sound like that, but I think he's saying it's always you, or it was always you, or something like that.
And it's like, honey, no.
Yeah, no, he definitely is like, I still love you, and then he gives her like a little salute with his baton as he's
and
let
this
out.
Like half wink, like, and it's interesting because this is a rare episode where it just, even though Columbo gets the murderer, like, it just, that last, the way that scene kind of wraps up just feels real icky.
It feels weird, yeah, for sure. But in an interesting way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not in a he got away with it, just in an interesting, different way.
It's
anyway.
It's a very good character study and definitely a lot of good and fun performances.
Yeah, I really enjoy this episode, and
for sure.
I'm looking forward to more Basset Hound.
Great. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hooray. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And, just one more thing, sir.
Oh?
You know where I could get some water for my mule?
Columboys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columboys theme is by Seth Boyer. For more information about this and other great Waffle Media projects, you can go to waffle.media. Thanks for listening.
Do a Gwyneth Paltrow joke?
Yeah, of course.
Sure.
Of course.
All right.
Please.
Here we go.
Fuck Goop.